Welcome to the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin, your source for real estate investment jewels of wisdom.
Welcome to the REI Diamonds Show. I am your host, Dan Breslin, and this is episode 148. On making, then losing $50 million with Rod Khalif and how to bounce back. Rod's famous in the podcasting world as the host of the Lifetime Cash Flow Through Real Estate Investing show with more than 7 million downloads. Rod's story, you know, begins with an empire that peaks at $50 million only to crumble as the real estate market crashed. And Rod is here on the show today to share that experience. And more importantly, we decided together to explain the mindset required to bounce back from that type of a disappointment for his story to now owning a few thousand units. But it's relevant for all of us here today, as we've all, I'm sure, had to bounce back from challenges or will at some point in the future. So let's let Rod tell it, shall we? All right. Welcome to the show, Mr. Rod Khalif. How you doing today?
Oh, awesome, Dan. Thanks for having me on. Let's have some fun today.
For sure. I actually had gotten your name, your information, from an audience member that I ended up having a meeting with here in Chicago. He's one of my lenders that funds projects. And he said, hey, you know, I check out this guy's podcast, that guy, and I check out this guy, Rod Khalif. You might like him. So I checked that out, listened to a couple shows. Oh, okay, yeah, this guy, I really like his mindset. I like his attitude. I love the fact that he's always trying to add value for everybody. And it sounds like he's done some pretty cool things. I'd love to have him on the show. And here we are a couple months later. You're on the show. And for people who might not have checked your show out already, maybe you want to give a little bit of background and kind of touch on your story about what you did in the past, what your business looks like today, sure. Rod, and then we kind of go from there.
Sure. Sure, sure. Well, the name of my show is the Lifetime Cashflow Podcast, and I'm just blown away. We just exceeded 7 million downloads this week, which just blows my mind. But, you know, I never planned to do anything with it. I just, you know, wanted to tell my story. And let me get into my story, because then it'll lend itself, because I felt like it was important enough to tell. And you, those of you listening can decide after you hear it. But, you know, let's go all the way back. I immigrated to this country when I was 6 years old with my brother Albert, my mother's Vantje. We came from the Netherlands. I was born in Holland, and we immigrated here to the States, and I didn't speak English. And we ended up in Denver, Colorado, where I lived for the next 30 years. And we really struggled, Dan. I mean, I remember we had to buy expired food because that's all my mom could afford. We drank powdered milk because it was cheaper than real milk. And, you know, I wore clothes from the Goodwill and the Salvation Army all the way through junior high school. But, you know, and I'm sure you've got listeners that have struggled or maybe are struggling now, and maybe had a lot harder than we did. But the one thing for me was I knew I wanted more. And luckily, my mom was a bit of an entrepreneur, but she also had an incredible work ethic. So what she did was she babysat kids so that she'd have some money to invest. And so we'd have more money for our lifestyle. And with her babysitting money, when I was 14, she bought the house across the street from us for about $30,000. Now, when I was 17, she told me it had gone up $20,000 in her sleep. And I'm like, what? I'm screw college. I'm not going to college. I'm getting into real estate. Okay. So I actually got my real estate broker's license right when I turned 18, which you could do back then with education. I mean, they got smart now, and you have to have some experience to become a broker. But I was actually a broker right when I turned 18 through education. And I'm going to be rich in real estate. Well, my first year in real estate, I maybe made about $8,000 to $10,000. My second year, I maybe made about $10,000 to $12,000. But my third year, I made well over $100,000. So what happened between year two and year three? Well, what happened, which is something I love to talk about on my show and my live events, is I 10x my income because I met somebody that taught me about mindset and psychology, and really how 80 to 90% of your success in anything is your mindset and your psychology. Only about 10 to 20% is the real estate stuff that we talk about on our shows. It really you know, you've got to be able to take action with what you learn and push through fear and maybe even get uncomfortable to build that life that you want. And so fast forward to today, I've owned over 2,000 properties, a lot of houses, some apartment complexes in three states. And in 2006, my net worth went up $17 million while I slept, a little more than my mom's $20,000. But there's a punchline, you know, that was the biggest year I've ever had to date. And, you do the math on that. And of course I did. It's about $8,500 an hour for the year. And I got a head so big, I could barely fit it through the door. I thought I was a real estate god. Well, Dan, you know, when people get like that, sometimes God or the universe will give them a smackdown. Well, that was 2008 for me. I lost that 17 million, a whole lot more. I actually lost $50 million conservatively. I call it a seminar. You know, it's only a failure if you don't get back up or you don't learn the lesson. It was my biggest seminar, but it was very, very painful. And, you know, because I thought I was set for life. But, you know, Dan, if you'd like, I can take just a few minutes and talk about the mindset strategies that it took to have $50 million to lose in the first place. But more importantly, what it took, or as importantly, what it took to recover from losing it. Which was just as hard. You want me to take a few minutes and kind of outline that a little bit?
Yeah, and let me just help set the frame too for the listeners, because I think the context and the timing of everything is really important. So would you mind kind of sharing when you got in real estate and just give us so that we have like maybe some reference points of time? Like how long was it up until 2008 built that?
Yeah, I'm about to turn 60 in 30 days. And in so this was 1978 when I turned 18. And I got in real estate. Okay, there weren't cell phones, or they just came out. In fact, actually, there weren't my first year. And the MLS listings came in a book. There was no internet. It couldn't even spell internet back then. So does that help? And then 81 was the year I 10x'd my income between 79 and or 80 rather 80 I guess.
But, yes, it does. Yes, it does. So we're about to get a story, a mindset shift over the course of, I think it's about 30 years, somewhere in there, from building this entire portfolio up to 2008. Does that sound about right?
Well, really to 2006. I stopped buying in 2005 and 2006. And so I don't know if that works out too, but yeah. I'd had 2,000 houses and multiple apartment complexes by that time. And in 2008, people always ask, how'd you lose? And let me say this. I was actually at a 30% loan to value, Dan, in 2006. Okay. And I still crashed and burned, and I'll explain why real quick. And then we can get back to the mindset piece, but
perfect.
What it was I had 800 houses here in Florida that I rented long term, and I had multiple apartment complexes. And there were several things that impacted my cash flow, and cash flow is everything. In fact, I wrote a book about this. The subtitle was The New Rules of Real Estate Investing, the new rules being focus on cash flow, value is irrelevant. And so what I did was, you know, being in Florida, Florida has no state income tax, so the property taxes are higher, relatively speaking, to other states. So that's number one. Number two is my properties were all along the Gulf Coast. So I had a lot of properties in wind zone, flood zones that required insurance, which of course impacted cash flow, higher insurance. But the big thing was the logistics. So let's say I sent a maintenance guy to one of my apartment complexes to fix a maintenance issue. Well, at an apartment complex, everything's the same. So you've got the same appliances, typically the same hardware, the same plumbing fixtures, electrical system, HVAC system, so you can stockpile parts. And so, you know, I could send a guy to one of my apartment complexes, and he could be in and out in an hour, boom, done. Well, if my houses were 2 hours one direction from Sarasota and 2 hours the other direction, up and down the Gulf Coast and everywhere in between. So if I had a maintenance issue at one of my houses, I would send a maintenance guy, and it might be an hour each way just to get there. Okay. Then he'd have to, and every house is different. Then he'd have to see what was wrong and then go find a Home Depot or a Lowe's where we'd have an account, which could be another hour round trip. Who knows? And then, and then, you know, if you've ever fixed anything, you get into it and you realize you don't have everything you need. Well, you know, that happens with maintenance guys as well. And, you know, what takes an hour at one of my apartment complexes takes all day at one of my houses. And you multiply that times 800 and it becomes pretty significant. And then the coup de grace was most of my houses were, you know, I had C-class houses, little small 2-1s and 3-1s. And most of them were occupied by contractors, you know, painters, plumbers, electricians, drywallers, HVAC guys, roofers. And I don't know if you remember 2008, but all construction, remodel and new, fell off a cliff. I mean, it was like a light switch went off. And you know, and so they didn't have work, and that was it. And so I couldn't hold it together. But again, and what's really interesting is that, yeah, I was at a 30% loan to value. By the time the crash was at the depth of it, I was actually upside down. So my inventory actually decreased in value more than 70%. It was insane. But anyway, so back to mindset. If you'll humor me, I'd love to share with your listeners, you know, the mindset it took to have that $50 million in assets to the mindset it took to get back to where I am today. You want me to get into that a little bit?
Absolutely. The floor is yours, Rod.
All right. Well, so here's what I want to tell you guys that are listening is I want to take you through a little process. And if you have the ability to take notes, it'll help, because it's really a very, very powerful process. But here's the key to the whole thing. You got to know what it is you want and more importantly, why you want it. With clarity. Clarity is power. And so it's kind of a version of a goal setting workshop, but I would call it a goal setting workshop on steroids. And I do this at my live events and with my coaching students, but I want to give you the outline so you guys can do it at home. So what you want to do is you want to pick an hour when you have a lot of energy. You don't do it after a meal. Make sure you're well hydrated and sit down and write down everything you could ever possibly want in life. So you're going to write down all the stuff, okay? There's nothing wrong with stuff. Write down the houses, the second houses, you know, the cars, the boats, the jet skis, the planes, the motorcycles, whatever it is. Write down all the stuff. Also, write down how much money, for example, you want in the bank in, say, 3 years and how much money you want in the bank in, say, 10 years. Write down how much cash flow you want from your real estate assets in, say, 3 years and then again in 10 years. And guys, you know, people spend more time planning Christmas or a birthday party than they do designing their lives. This is designing your life. And so I want you to imagine that if you write it down, you're going to get it, which is not outside the realm of reality. Just the simple act of writing your goals down, what it does, it triggers something called your reticular activating system. And it's that filter in your brain that subconsciously filters out what it thinks you should be focusing on. And the best example is a car example. When you first buy a car, you know, you never really noticed them before you bought it. But when you buy it, you see them everywhere. That's your reticular activating system because they were always there. You're just now pointed to them. Same thing happens with your goals. Now, once you and don't, guys, those of you that are listening that are analytical, don't analyze this as you're writing down your goals. Just keep writing. You can scratch them out later, but take the lid off your brain. Imagine if you write it down, you'll get it. So don't limit yourself. You're only limited by your own thoughts. So just pretend there is no box. If you want a jet, write a jet. If you want a yacht, write that down. Private island, whatever it is, write it down. So write down everything you can possibly think of with high energy. Then I also want you to write down maybe where you want to go on and visit on vacation. Like me, I've got a travel vision board here right next to my desk here of the places I either enjoy going or the places I want to go again. Then I want you to also write down the things you're going to do in your lifetime. So by the way, these goals, I want small goals and the goals, lifetime goals. So the big ones, the really big ones. But write down also what you want to do. Maybe you want to write a book or climb a mountain or jump out of a perfectly good airplane like I did a few months ago, which I will never do again. but you know, I did it. So write down what you want to do this lifetime. Then I also want you to write down what you want to learn in this lifetime. Okay. And you know, me, maybe you want to learn a foreign language. Me, I want to learn how to fly a helicopter, and I also want to learn how to play the drums. And, you know, my wife bought me a drum set. It's in one of the other buildings here at my compound. And I don't even know what end of the sticks to use yet, but it's there. It's ready for me when I'm ready to, when I have the bandwidth to go practice. But, you know, write down what you want to learn. And lastly, write down who you want to help. Okay. You know, we will do more for others than we'll do for ourselves. So write down who you want to help. And like for me, I bought my parents a house here in Port Charlotte, Florida on a canal and bought them a car and took them on cruises. Who do you want to do something for? Write that down. All right. Then when you can't think of another thing, it's not real until it's measurable. Okay. So put a time limit on each goal. How many years it's going to take you to achieve it. And just guess. Again, if you're analytical, don't overanalyze this. Just pick a number. Like I would recommend a 1, a 3, a 5, or even a 10 or a 20. Okay. Because I will tell you, people will overestimate what they can do in a year and massively underestimate what they can do in 5 or 10 or 20 years. I'll give you an example. When I was 18, I lived in Denver, as I said. But I knew I always wanted to live on the beach. I'd see palm trees and pictures of beaches and the waves and I would visualize living on the beach. And 20 years later, I built this incredible mansion here in Sarasota. It's on the beach. It was $8 million house, 10,000 square feet. I mean, just incredible home, which was unthinkable when I was 18. But so again, don't limit yourself, guys. Those of you listening, write it down. If you want it, write it down, because I'm telling you, you can make it happen. There's nothing you can't do, be, or have. All right. So once you're done, you put a time limit on each goal. There's just a couple more steps and I'm almost done here. So what I want you to do next, once you put a number by each goal, is pick your number one goal. I mean, that goal, when you get it, you're like, oh my God, this is amazing. That goal, write that down, put it on another sheet of paper. All right. Now, if there's two or three that are equally exciting for you, just pick one, because it's not going to matter for what we're going to do next. But then I also want you to pick your top 3 1-year goals and put those on another piece of paper and leave room in between them. Now, at this point, you're ahead of most people. In fact, you're ahead of just about anybody, just by articulating these things that you want in your life. And again, you're getting clarity on these things that you want in your life. How the hell are you ever going to get what you want if you don't know what it is? Clearly, that's why this is so important. So you've got your 4 goals on another piece of paper. You've got your number one goal and 3 1-year goals. Now, those are going to pull you. They'll propel you. They'll push you. They'll get you to take action. But the real fuel is knowing why those goals are an absolute freaking must, not a should, a must. Yeah, I mean, people say I should be a better parent. I should, you know, work harder. I should do my side hustle so I can build freedom for my family. I should take more care of my health. And we end up shooting all over ourselves. but, you know, we've got to make it a must. And so write a paragraph why each one of those goals is an absolute must, and use emotionally charged words like amazing and incredible and beautiful and wonderful. Use, you know, because words are very, very powerful. So use words that will push you and propel you. And, you know, you might write so that we can have the freedom, you know, my family can be free and we can do whatever we want and go wherever we want and bring whoever we want and do it whenever we want, you know, whatever it is for you, so that I can show my wife what success looks like, my husband what success looks like. I can show our kids what it means to be successful. You know, we can live the life of our dreams and so write, you know, positive reasons why it's an absolute must for you to achieve these goals. And once you're done with that, I want you to take it one step further and put some pain in there if you don't achieve the goals, and make it freaking painful so that I don't feel like a failure. So I don't feel like I've lived a life of regret. So I don't fail my spouse. So I don't fail my children. Make it harsh, because as human beings, we will do more to avoid pain than gain pleasure. And guys, this is the fuel. Okay. This is the fuel to get you to push through any limiting beliefs that you have, to push through any fear that you have, to get you to take massive action, to get you to stay up late, you know, to work your dream, to get up early, to work on weekends. This is the fuel. And it works, or even, you know, maybe you're comfortable, and I'm going to tell you, the comfort zone's a warm place, but nothing freaking grows there. So you got to get uncomfortable, and this is the fuel to do that. So you've got your positive and your negative reasons why it's an absolute must. And then, and I'll tell you something about the negative. You know, there was a hospice nurse in Australia, who counseled hospice patients. Her name was Bronnie Ware, and she would ask them what regrets they had at the end of their life. And she even wrote a book about this. The 5 Regrets of Dying is the name of the book. And you don't want to know what the number one regret was, Dan? It was not living the life I could have lived, living someone else's life, not living to my potential. And I say, screw that. Okay. And so again, you guys got to tap into the fuel. And so this is how I, again, this is how I had 50 million to lose in the first place. And then how I got back to, you know, what I'm blessed to enjoy today. So anyway, I hope that added some value, brother.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool. I did stuff very similar of this along the way and had my own reasons why. And you're absolutely spot on, Rod.
While I'm thinking about it. I'm sorry, I just thought of something I forgot to mention. It's really kind of important. Once you have these goals done, it's so important for you to get pictures of them. And let me give you, because you want to visualize them and pictures are the best way to do that. And so, I'll give you some examples. When I was 18, I'll give you some public examples. Jim Carrey is a great example. He wrote himself a check for $10 million when he was flat broke. And he'd look at it, he'd visualize himself cashing it when he was broke. And that's how much money he made for Dumb and Dumber. I'll give you some of my own examples. When I turned 18, I figured I had to have a four-door car so I could show people houses because I was going to be rich being a real estate broker. Well, I bought this Ford Granada, this gray bench seat in the front, ugly piece of you know what, but I had to have a four-door car. But I worked with a guy who had two Corvettes and he had a lot of money. I dated his daughter and he let me drive his car, hit one of those Corvettes. And I'm like, oh my God, this is so cool. So I actually got a picture out of a magazine. This is before the internet, got a picture out of a magazine of a Corvette and I put it on the visor of that bone ugly Granada. And within a year or two, I had one. And I want to give you a couple more examples, but let me preframe this by saying, this is not me bragging because these things I'm going to share with you really don't interest me anymore, but they're great to hopefully inspire you and tell you the power, show you the power of this. So this is back when the TV show Magnum PI was out. What was the actor? Actor's name was Tom Selleck and, he was a detective and he drove this Ferrari 308. And I thought that was the coolest freaking thing I'd ever seen. So I got a picture of that actual car and put it on the visor of my Corvette. So every time I got in, I'd see it. And within a year or two, I had a Maserati look just like it. The last example, another car example, I'm the guy that always wanted a Lamborghini and I had the posters in my room with the Lamborghinis and the bikini girls and the whole thing. All the time I was growing up, it was the Lamborghini Countach was the model that I wanted. But what's crazy is my son, when he was 9 years old, collected models of exotic cars. He had about 30 of them, you know, the Porsches, the McLarens, the Ferraris, everything. He had a model the exact same color and style that I ended up getting of Lamborghini that I wrecked ultimately, but that's another story. But the point is, this, the pictures really work. You know, like I've got pictures, I have a paper planner and I'm looking at it right now. And in the back of this thing, I've got pictures that have been in here for 20 years. The first pictures are my gratitude pictures. They're pictures of my kids when they were very young. And then I've got pictures of the houses that I wanted. What's crazy is like I've got three pictures on a page here. The top picture looks just like that house on the beach, the view from that beach. The bottom picture looks just like the compound. I lost that house on the beach, by the way, but the you know, and all the craziness. But the compound that I live in now, the pictures here look just like it. And I live in this incredible compound on the water. I've got six buildings. I've got a giant main house and I've got a two-bedroom guest house. I've got a giant exercise facility, a media center with a video studio and just spectacular home. It's like a park. And because God's got a sense of humor, I can see my old house across the bay that I bought.
Oh, wow.
It's literally out my backyard. But all the pictures, I've got pictures of the Lamborghini in here before I bought it, the Rolls Royce, the Bentley, all this crap that I got because I had pictures. So, you know, I know I've lost some of you analytical ones, but I'm here to tell you, if you ignore this, it would be a mistake because this stuff really does work. Anyway, I didn't want to forget that, Dan.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's key. The pictures are so important. The goal setting is important. The reason why to get up and be able to grind and put in the hours. I mean, there's times 8, 9, 10 o'clock right at night. I'm not advocating 90-hour weeks, but there's times I do that because I enjoy the game, and I enjoy the game because I have a sense of purpose for building the business and showing up big for my team, for my partners. You know, there's houses, we buy houses, Rod, in like, it doesn't matter the neighborhood. We'll buy them on the water in, you know, Florida. We'll buy them. We do Atlanta, Chicago, and Philly for the most part. But we don't discriminate based on price or neighborhood. And there's a lot of people who we've stepped in and helped with title issues, problems with the IRS, finding a new place, moving on from the hoarder house. And like these number in the thousands of how many people who are in these tough situations that may have been stuck in them had they not come across our company and we helped them move on from that stuff. And so I'm like motivated to move people like that. Whereas in the beginning, before I had my money, when I was sitting there broke in 2008, 2009, 2010, clawing my way back from being broke as the market changed myself, my daughter was my reason why. And I was living in Philadelphia, and there was like nothing that was going to stop me, Rod, from being able to pick up and move to Chicago, which I ultimately did. And I live on the water here, too. It's like being on the ocean. Yeah. I can't see the other side of the... The reason I moved out here was literally so I could be there near her. We were doing like planes and stuff, and you know, it was like weekend once a month. And now I had lunch with her today. I've been doing it every Friday. She's gonna go off to college in a couple weeks here, and it's like, so it was like, you know, I got it, and I satisfied the reason why, and I had to like continue to keep finding like new reasons why. Once the money came, you know, you got your money, you're making your cash flows. What's the next reason?
So glad you said that.
You know what I mean?
I'm so glad you said that. Yeah, I'm so glad you said that. I need to add one thing while I'm thinking about it. Because your goals do change. I want to tell you just a quick thing here. I'm so glad you reminded me. So, you know, I built that house on the beach. Okay. I mean, I worked for that thing for 20 years. I mean, this place was magnificent. I giant waterfall from the second floor balcony into the pool. These giant palm trees. I paid tens of thousands of dollars for palm trees that bent out over the pool. The pool was in magazines. And I mean, to give you an idea, I had a giant staircase that went up through the middle of this house on the second floor. In fact, I'll land the plane with this. On the second floor, I had an aquarium. The aquarium was somewhere between 150 and 200 grand. So that give you an idea of the house. Okay. I mean, crazy place. But anyway, 2 months after I moved in, I'm floating in the pool, literally 2 months after I moved in. This is something I'd worked for my whole life. And I'm floating in the pool. I'm looking up at this incredible house, this testament to my ego, which is really what it was. It was to prove to the world that I was good enough and that I mattered. And that's, you know, when I look back on it, I realize that's really what I was doing, was just trying to prove myself and show the world that I matter. And I'm looking up at this house. And the pool's changing color at night. It's got fiber optic lighting. Just a magnificent home. But I got really depressed. And I mean, I didn't just get bummed. I mean, I was really bummed. And I'm like, what the hell? I just achieved success like 10x, 1000x societal standards. And I'm depressed. And I couldn't figure it out. And when I look back on it, I realized there were two things happening. And that's what your comment just triggered in me. One is you should never achieve a big goal without having other goals lined up behind it. Because like the good book says, without a vision, the people perish. You got to have a vision for the future. And I didn't know what the hell I was going to do next. So that was one piece. But the bigger piece, Dan, was I had been totally focused on me. It was all Rod, Rod, Rod. Show the world I'm good enough. Show the world I matter. And I'd been totally focused on me at the expense of my family, at the expense of my kids. But it was really narcissistic. And luckily, that year I went and saw Tony Robbins. I saw him speak at an event. I bought a bunch of books to get myself back, Dale Carnegie and Zig Ziglar back then. And one of them was Tony's book. And I was like, hey, this is cool. So I went and saw him, and I found out he fed families for the holidays. And see, I had been totally focused on success, but I was unfulfilled. And Tony calls it the science of achievement versus the art of fulfillment. And so I come back from that and I'm like, you know what? Do something for someone else. What a concept. It took me till I was 40 to get that memo, but I got the memo. So I decided to feed some families. I fed five families. We called a church, said, who really needs some help? And the third family changed my life, and we bought them big boxes of food. It was for Thanksgiving. We got frozen turkeys. We found out they had kids. We got toys for the kids. I go up to this third house, and it's this shotgun, and I'm sure you've seen them if you bought in Philly and elsewhere, where you walk, it's like a row house almost. You walk in the living room, you walk through the bedroom to get to the kitchen, which has the bathroom off of it. So it's not even a one bedroom, it's a shitty one bedroom, because you got to walk through the bedroom to get to the kitchen. Well, this lady lived there with five kids, okay? So she comes out on the porch with all the food and stuff there, and she starts crying. Her kids come out, the older ones start crying. I start crying and I'm freaking hooked. And I'm blessed to say in the last, now I guess 19 years, we have fed 75,000 kids here. We've also done, you know, thousands and thousands of backpacks filled with school supplies, thousands of teddy bears for the local police departments for their officers to put in their cars. And that's what fulfillment is all about. So those of you listening, I know you want success if you're listening to Dan's show, and I get it. And some of you are walking around with blood dripping from your teeth. You want it so bad. Well, I'm here to tell you, success without this piece, not, you don't have to do anything as big as I'm talking about here. Hell, just adopt a family, help a family, help an elderly person, or pick a cause, do something for the environment, for animals, whatever. But do something, because success without that is not success. And I know this because I'll tell you, I've interviewed billionaires on my show, mega millionaires, and I can recognize it when I'm talking to one of these guys that's super successful financially. But I can see it because it was me, if they're just like I was back then. And I feel sorry for them, because we're put on this earth to give back. So again, I'll get off my soapbox, but guys, if you want financial success, it will come much faster as well if you incorporate this piece. So anyway, I'm really glad you reminded me, and I'm sorry I interrupted you, buddy. It just hit me that I forgot to mention that.
Yeah, it's like, for me, it was like these plateaus looking back, Rod, and it's like, you know, when you were in that pool, I would describe that as kind of like a plateau, and it's like,
sure,
when you're hungry, when you're starving, and you need to pay the bills and the rent and the mortgage or whatever it is, you know, the money can be the goal, and it can be the reason why you get out the door and pay put 90 hours in a week. A lot of people in society do that because they have to make the payments and they're not financially free. And like Maslow's order of hierarchy of needs start to get filled, and all of a sudden you got just a little bit of money in the bank and you hit that plateau, and maybe this higher number that some people are able to kind of set the thermostat for, and you reach it, and then you got to find that next sense of purpose. So it was a cool illustration to hear that second piece there, how you've gotten past that part. Rod, so let me just go back and touch on something, because I know, you know, you and I are at blessed places right now. We're not in 2008. I'm sure there's someone listening in right now who's kind of like at that challenging moment. I know we have good economic cycle that we're in right now, and so it may not be like a lot of people like 2008, but if we could go back to when things were like really falling apart, I mean, how did you deal with it when the whole world was caving in? Like,
good question, man. And I'll tell you, it really went back to remembering. Now, don't get me wrong, I hid under a freaking rock for probably 2 or 3 months. All you could see was my little eyeball poking out. I mean, I was licking my wounds because I thought I was set for life, man. I thought 80 million baby boomers getting old and getting cold. I thought Florida was recession proof. I mean, it was like ground zero for the, I told you how much my portfolio dropped. And so, you know, it's sure. I mean, I licked my wounds, but luckily, you know, I was around people that were even thriving through this. And, you know, guys, those of you listening, surround yourself with people that want more. You know, I know you've heard it. You're the 5 people you hang around with. Make sure that you do that. And I'll just mention, I've got a Facebook group. There's about 30,000 people in it. It's the largest multifamily Facebook group really on the planet. And join that, or get around people. Go to a meetup. Go to local meetups. But get around people that will push you and hold you accountable. You know, so many of us have family or friends in our life that we talk about are, you know, where we want to go, and they hold us back because of their own fears, that either they're afraid of losing us, or they're afraid of feeling bad about themselves because of our success. So I would tell you, if you have people like that in your life, love them, but don't let them influence you, and choose your peers very carefully. So that was one piece. I got around people that knew that were thriving and wanted more. I got a coach, which really helped me a lot as well. And then most importantly, I wrote my goals almost every day. I focused on that. It's so easy when you're going through pain to focus on the pain, but whatever you focus on gets bigger. So, you know, if you're trying to get out of debt, don't focus on debt, focus on making money. I'll give you an example. They asked Mother Teresa, you know, if she was anti-war, and she said, no, I'm pro-peace. See the distinction? And so it's really important to focus on what you want. And luckily I was around people that caused me to do that. And every day I'd visualize, I'd sit in my chair, I created vision boards, and I'd look at them, and I'd do gratitude for the things that I had in my life, my amazing, beautiful wife, my kids, my coaching students. And I would just sit every morning. I still do this every morning. I'll sit in my chair for just a minute, and I'll just be grateful for the things that I have in my life. But then I'll be grateful for the things that I want in my life as if I already have them. And sometimes I even get emotional over things I don't even have yet. And I know I've lost some more of you analytical ones, but I'm telling you, this shit works. So trust me on this. This is how, you know, I got back to where I'm at now. And, you know, a lot of people don't recover from losing $50 million. I mean, I remember in the late 20s and when the Great Depression, there were people jumping out of buildings for losing less. So, you know, anyway, I hope I answered your question,
Bob. Yeah, it's funny, Rod. I mean, you mentioned like people losing, like, whether it's 50 million or you had 100,000, like it feels the same way. Like, right. When I went broke, sure. I remember waking up some days, Rod, and it was like, I don't know if I want to continue living here. Like, it didn't work out. I'm not sure if this is like, luckily I picked up the Bible and read that thing cover to cover. Yeah. And I remember like the variation of the reason, the goals. One little thing that I did where one of my mentors had walked me through at the time, he said like, go write down, you know, a year in advance, and you kind of do it in like a meditation state with your eyes closed. And he's like, and picture your perfect day a year from now. And we went through the goals and what you want to have. And then he brought it back to like, what's the one thing where if it happens in that year, you look back and you know that that year was a success. And then you write down a couple steps to do it, a couple people to avoid, and a couple people who you need to surround yourself with and get uncomfortable, like you talked about, the five people around you. And this happened for me around 2011, 2012, somewhere in there. When I was kind of rebuilding my business from being broke, and my one thing was like going out to Chicago, and I found the paragraph or the couple pages in my, like, you know, journal a few years later, and it was like, you know, read something to the effect of, I woke up today and I'm like, I got my brand new Ford Explorer. It was like my great dream that I wanted downstairs in the garage, and I look out over Lake Michigan and the waves are crashing. I pick my daughter up for school, da 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 da, and go on about the day.
I do the exact same thing at my live events. The exact same thing that you just described. Nice. I have people pick their ideal day. The exact same thing. You know, I do live events around the country. I do four a year. And, you know, we spend a lot of time on mindset, and that's, and it's, your coach was brilliant, because the more you associate with what you want and write it down, it pulls you into it as you're a proof positive of that dynamic. And so I have people write their ideal day from the minute they get up to the, when they go to bed. We do a lot of other mindset stuff too. I mean, it's drinking through a fire hose on the real estate side, but you know, the sad reality, as you know, buddy, because you're in the business, is that 90% of the people that buy a course or go to an event or something like mine, they don't do a damn thing with it. Well, not on my watch. So I mean, listen, you had a great coach, what you just described, man. So, You achieved it all, right? And you achieved it all.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, not to take anything away from the rest of the paragraphs and the great ideas of the execution that actually took place there, you know, for the analytical types, all that happens too. There's books and books of that stuff there. But, One last little question I'm curious about. You mentioned the gym, and I know for me the last, I don't know, 8-9 years or so, I quit drinking, quit smoking cigarettes, quit doing anything else that would affect my mindset, and then tried to really focus on, you know, health, eating right, et cetera. Is that something that you kind of like focus on? You got the gym, and like, how important would you say health is in being able to build a successful life?
It's foundational, brother. It's foundational. You know, part of my coaching, I'm a high performance coach, and part of my coaching is all about energy. And we use the word energy, but energy is impossible to have without health. So let me give you an example. I mean, if you're listening to the show and you've got a W-2 job, or maybe you own a business, but you're thinking, I want to do real estate. And if you do, I hope you'll think multifamily and come listen to my podcast or come see me live. But if you're going to do that on the side, and let's say you've got a family and you've got kids, you're going to have incredible energy to stay up late and to be the best parent and to be the best husband or wife and father and mother. You're going to have incredible energy. And without health, you can't do that. So it's foundational, bro. I mean, it's everything, okay? How you eat and exercise. And, you know, my love language is gifts. And if you haven't read the five languages of love, you know, I highly recommend you get it. My love language is gifts. I give gifts, and my students get gifts from me every month. And one of them is a book called The Miracle Morning. And it's by a guy named Hal Elrod. I had him on my podcast. Beautiful guy. But, I mean, huge bestseller. But it just talks about getting up in the morning, going and getting up earlier, okay, like an hour earlier. Everybody can do it, even if it's freaking 4 a.m. It doesn't matter. You can do it, and you and you work out for an hour or 30 minutes to an hour. You read a good book for 30 minutes. You meditate or pray. You journal, or he calls it scribing. And when you do that, your days are magnificent every time. So health is critical, brother. Long answer to a simple question.
Yeah, for sure. Cool. I know we made a point, you and I, when we start our episode, to kind of like touch on the mindset and stuff, but I do want to kind of like, you know, as we start to get to our wrap up here, Rod, I'm just going to give like a vouch for like, hey, if you want to check out a ton of, you know, the real estate nuts and bolts, a bunch of great interviews, like your show is that, especially for multifamily oriented investors. So like anyone who's listening now, make sure to check that out. We didn't touch on it here today, but Rod has a bunch of high caliber guests on, and it's worth a look. So why don't we
let me say one other thing.
Go ahead.
Let me say one other thing. I've got a gift for your listeners. If you're interested in multifamily, I've got a toolbook on my website. Well, I'll just give you a text. Text the word Rod to 41411, and it's like a due diligence book on steroids. It's not some fluffy piece to try to sell you shit. It's got every possible question you'd want to ask yourself if you're evaluating a property, and it's free. And it's almost 70 pages long. And so if you text Rod to 41411, we'll get you a free copy. So I just want to do that for your listeners. Anyway, please, I just didn't want to forget that either. I'm sorry.
Cool. Yeah, no worries. So, first question here as we get to the wrap up is, two book recommendations, but like one you would make to maybe someone who's starting off, could be multifamily, regular real estate, whatever.
Sure.
And then a book recommendation that you'd make to a guy like me who's been in the business for like 13 years and, you know, has a little bit of momentum going.
Well, I'm going to tell you, buddy, I'm not going to give you books that are real estate related. Okay. I have thousands of books. Okay. I'm better read than just about anybody I know. Like right now I'm reading, if you have a team, I would tell you or anybody that owns a business to read Traction. We're implementing the EOS system, which is via the book Traction, which is fantastic. But like I said, I gift books every single month. So let me give you some of my top ones. One of the ones that I give my students is Turning Pro, and it talks about stop acting as an amateur and become a professional. So if you're going to do this business, take off your employee hat, put on your entrepreneur hat, and become a freaking professional. So that's Turning Pro. Another one is The Slight Edge, about those little decisions that you make every single day that turn the trajectory of your life up or down. And you may not think it's a big decision to have that donut today or to not exercise today, but then those days stack up and they're a huge decision. So that's another one. Oh, let's see. The One Thing by Gary Keller. You talked about The One Thing in your description from your coach. That's a fantastic book about, you know, the next action. The Magic of Thinking Big, one of Jack Canfield's books. You know, I could go on and on. My book is pretty darn good about multifamily. I gave away 20,000 copies for free, and my team was like, hey, stupid, let's put this on Amazon and make some money. So I just put it on Amazon. It's a bestseller. It's only in Kindle right now, but it's a bestseller in three categories in Kindle. The physical copy is going to be live in probably 60 days. But since I didn't give that away anymore, I'm giving away that tool book, that due diligence checklist on steroids. On my website. And I've got some other books on my website there too. So if you're interested in the multifamily space, I hope you'll either listen to my podcast or, you know, go to my website and watch the videos there. It's rodcleef.com, because there's just tons of free content there. My life is about adding value. I get so much pleasure out of it. And the other thing is, on my podcast, I interview an expert every week like you do, Dan, but I also do a mindset piece. It's only 5 minutes, but I call them Own Your Power. And we talk about things like focus, like determination, like responsibility, like 100% commitment, goals, all sorts of things to motivate you. Even if you're not doing multifamily, you'll get incredible value from those. So I hope you'll check it out. And I do live events every year. So four, I don't know when this will go live, but next one is in January in LA. And then after that, it's Orlando and then Dallas. And anyway, so I do four of those. It's rodsbootcamp.com. And it's just me for 3 days. I don't bring in outside speakers to sell you shit like everybody else. It's just me. So, you know, if you can make that, the tickets are ridiculously cheap. So would love to see if you can make it.
Cool. So what if you could go back? You were a guy who got into the business at 18 years old. What if you could go back to your 18-year-old self and share the crown jewel of wisdom after, you know, 30-plus years or so in the business, Rod? What would that be?
I can tell you, it's right. The first chapter of my book, I wouldn't have done single family. I would, you know, it's okay to start with single family or duplexes and triplexes, but I would have got into multifamily because the reason I started my podcast was when I was going through the crash, my apartments were doing just fine. It was the houses that pulled me down. And of course, in my infinite wisdom, I cross collateralized packages of houses with my apartments because I got a 0.5% interest rate break like a dummy. So I lost everything. But I would go bigger. I would go into multifamily because it's fairly recession resistant. And the beautiful thing about multifamily is it's empirical. It's really just numbers. If you ask all the right questions, get my toolbook, that due diligence checklist, and you learn how to analyze the numbers properly and you ask all the right questions, it's pretty damn hard to make a mistake. And that was the reason I started my podcast, frankly, to give people that message. Like when I first started the podcast, I used to say, I'll never sell you anything because I never planned to. I just wanted to add value. And then now I'm a liar because we hit 1 million downloads. I'm like, shit, I better do something with this. But
fair
anyway.
Enough. How many units is too small? You said multifamily. I don't know if we defined what you thought would be 18-year-old.
Yeah, residential multifamily is 2 to 4 units. There's nothing wrong with starting with that, man. If you're young and you're going to buy a property, for God's sakes, buy a plex, buy a fourplex, triplex, live in one unit. At some point, you'll be living for free. You know, it's called house hacking. Start there. But the beautiful thing about commercial multifamily is it's based on a multiple of the net income. And, you know, we bought 1,000 doors this year and in 5 states. And I think we just locked up another 168 units today, actually, and we're in best and final in about 2,000. Now we're kissing a lot of frogs. And I want to say this to your listeners, you know, learn this business. Do not dabble. Okay. Dabblers get their butts kicked and there's some stupid stuff going on right now. We like bid on a property and we see what it sells for and we're like scratching our heads. I would call it irrational exuberance. And, you know, real estate goes through cycles and we're at the top of one right now. Now, are there deals? Yes. But you got to kiss a lot of frogs to find them. So, you know, just be careful. If you're going to get into this business, come see me or learn from someone else that knows this business like Dan, and don't dabble in it, because you can become filthy rich in it. And it's not a get rich quick thing, but it's a become super freaking wealthy over time thing. But you've got to learn the business, bottom line.
Cool. And beyond the website and the text messages that you had mentioned, is there any other place people can get some more info about you?
No, thanks.
Check you out some more?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, man. If you go on iTunes and just put in real estate, I usually come up number one or two every time. So check out my podcast. I really think you'll enjoy it. People really like it. And my website has, you know, tons of videos and books and things that are free. And of course, my Facebook group is almost 31,000 people in it. And just, you know, make sure you surround. Oh, to get to the Facebook group, just go to multifamilycommunity.com. It's a direct link to the Facebook group. That's multifamilycommunity.com. And then if you can make one of my live events, I promise you, you'll be glad you came. And they're a blast. Okay. Cause I make it really high energy and we work on mindset and pushing through fear and goals and all the, you know, things that you and I discussed. And they're just a blast. And, you know, on the Saturday night, it's usually Friday, Saturday, Sunday. On the Saturday night, I usually have somewhere between $2 and $3 billion on the panels on stage, answering questions late into the evening. So it's just it's an awesome experience. But, and that's rodsbootcamp.com. But listen, thanks for having me on the show, Dan. It's been a lot of fun. And, you know, I appreciate the opportunity to hopefully add a little value.
For sure. Thank you for coming on the show, Rod. And thank you for tuning in to this episode of the REI Diamond Show. Up next, Allie Boone and I dive deep into turnkey rentals and the latest mutation of that business model, Burkey Rentals, which is the buy, rehab, rent, refinance method so popular right now, which allows some locking in of forced equity while having the renovation and management done by the turnkey provider. You'll want to check that one out. Dealmakers, I have cash for you if you've got a deal I can buy. I buy houses and apartment complex deals in Atlanta, Chicago, and Philadelphia, a two-hour drive from the downtown of either of those city centers. So if you have a deal in that geographic location, please contact me directly using the form at reidiamonds.com. Accredited investors receive double-digit returns by passively investing in real estate. For more info, go to fundrehabdeals.com. That concludes this episode. Thank you again for tuning in to the REI Diamond Show. Dan Breslin here. I'll catch you on the next one.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin. To receive email notifications of new weekly episodes, sign up at www.reidiamonds.com.